Welcome to the REI Mastermind Network, where host Jack Haas gathers amazing stories from leaders in real estate investing. In each episode, our guests will tell you what they're doing that works, what they've tried that failed, and best of all, you'll learn actionable steps to take your real estate investing to the next level. Now, here's Jack with another value-packed episode.
Stacy Gray joins me here, and you could learn what her team is up to by heading over to organizetoscale.com. And Stacy has some free resources, but there's a catch. You got to shoot her a quick email at scale@organizetoscale.com to take advantage of that. Really appreciate your time, Stacy, as we talk about scaling your real estate investing business.
Yes, I'm excited to be here and share some insights I've learned from doing 36 businesses in 36 months.
Really? 36 businesses in 36 months. That's a pretty rapid pace.
It's a really rapid pace with quite a different range of visionary leaders as well. So they weren't my personal businesses, but real estate investors who were looking to scale their real estate investing businesses through syndication is what we focused on.
Well, I imagine there's probably a recurring tune or something there. What are some of the common struggles that are people, real estate investors in particular, experience when they're trying to scale their business?
In my experience, a lot of folks who get into real estate investing are kind of deal junkies. They love looking at markets. They love looking at deals. They like analyzing the deals. And then when they run out of their own cash and credit, they start saying, maybe I can get my friends and family to give me money to do bigger and better deals. Or their friends and family are like, man, they're making so much money investing in real estate. I really want to get involved and invest with them as well. So they have friends and family coming and asking to invest with them. And they don't even know that they're actually starting a business. So they just feel like I'm doing more deals. And then next thing they know, they realize, oh, this real estate thing is actually turning into a business that needs operations and systems and people and playbooks. And then that aha moment comes and they're like, oh gosh, okay, I got to change my ways from being an in the business, in the weeds operator type person to elevating and developing leaders and systems and processes that they can then delegate to team members to pull the levers day to day so that they can do bigger deals, raise more capital, and scale without sacrificing their relationships, their freedom, their time, et cetera. Because most people set out to get into real estate to create some type of freedom. They want the passive income to have time freedom, location freedom, financial freedom. And then they end up sacrificing their freedom, like even their eyes closed freedoms, like their time with their family, connection, love, peace, joy, to build these passive income portfolios. And then they wake up one day and they really created just a job for themselves. And they've got to get out of that frame of mind, but also have really tangible things that they can implement to confidently extract themselves with maintaining visibility. So there's not like that freak out moment or they're scared they're going to let their investors down or a deal's going to go sideways. And so it's a process of changing their mindset around what it is they're actually building and then making the psychological shift and the structural shift within themselves and inside of their businesses so that they can do bigger deals without it taking more time and headache.
You've brought up some really important things there. One in particular that I would want to start things off on, though, is you mentioned that a lot of people, they get into real estate investing. The next thing you know, they have a business on their hands. It's almost sounds like as much of a mindset shift associated with that. I keep saying on this show over and over again that we have to treat it like a business instead of a hobby or a side hustle or whatever that buzzword can be. Is that one of the first things that you find you have to battle?
Yes. So when I first started organizing to scale syndication businesses specifically, I thought it was structural. I was like, okay, I'll come in and I'll put the operational systems in place, put the processes in place, help them hire and train their people. And we would do that. And we did it successfully. And then I started realizing that they were hitting a ceiling. And I realized the ceiling was psychological. And the other aspect, so now we incorporate not just the structural sides of the systems, but the psychological systems and the social systems, because people, entrepreneurship is challenging. And especially if you don't even know you're an entrepreneur or you don't even know you have a business, it's even more challenging. So they have it, most people have a vision of what they want to do, or at least some semblance of a vision of what they want to do. And they think they're clear. Right? We can see the front of the puzzle box and we know what we want to build. And we think everybody else can see it too. And they, the process is getting their, them to understand, one, it's a business, and two, that their vision needs to be articulated in a way that they can aggregate resources in terms of people, labor, investors to it. And so it is a huge mindset shift, because then you have to become, if you're looking at it as a business, you're saying, I need to have vision, mission, values. I need to understand what my 10-year target is. I need to understand what my quarterly 3 to 5 priorities are. I need to understand what my key performance indicators are. I need to understand what my 7 to 10 core processes are. I need to understand seat scorecards. And then it starts getting overwhelming to them, because they're not thinking of it as a business. They're thinking of it as just doing another deal. And so, yeah, making that mindset shift is really, really critical. And it's also a process. It's not like you just wake up one day and you have this mindset shift. It's a process of really spending a day clarifying your vision, spending a day clarifying your process maps and workflows, spending a day strategically planning out your next 90-day execution plans. And then with that level of clarity, they can get back into the momentum building activities that they love, which is market analysis and deals, but then they have this support underneath them. And once they start feeling that and start experiencing the freedom that systems and people provide to them when they train them, the psychological shift starts really happening. And it's more of an experiential transition than it is just a one-time flip of a switch.
It's kind of interesting. You said that we're kind of deal junkies. I can't agree more. That's obvious on the surface of it. We also have a tendency of being a bit chasing the next squirrel.
Yes. And
finding the next opportunity. You know, some of us who are doing flipping houses, for example, next thing you know, we're looking at land and variety of other things. I would imagine one of the benefits of engaging with a group like yours is having that focus, and kind of with focus, I find you also find growth.
Yes. If you're, especially because with focus, you start exposing what's working and what's not working. And then you have the courage to embrace the brutal facts. And when you embrace the brutal facts, then you can make a transition. It's when we don't want to lean into that side of it, that it sometimes halts our growth in business.
So part of the scaling aspect would be a lot of individuals are going to have to make their first hires. And being solopreneurs and entrepreneurs, I have another mindset shift that is hard to get over, is seeing adding people as an investment instead of a cost. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. So we have a saying that sometimes we throw people at process problems. So I have a hierarchy of how I like to approach hiring, because sometimes we need to know what our processes are and also know our sweet spot as the solopreneur, so that then we can hire strategically and not just throw people at it. So the first step is really understanding yourself as a leader. What do you want the business to do for you? What is your sweet spot? Are you naturally wired to want to be the one flying around to conferences, flying to markets, looking at deals, talking with investors, which is a lot of the people that we work with falls into that camp. And I consider those people more visionary type leaders, where they are more sales oriented and they feel very confident that if they had operational support on the back end, they could really scale. So understanding how you're naturally wired as a leader allows you to then strategically hire that first person that is going to be complementary to your natural profile and wiring and what you want the business to do for you. And that first hire could be an executive assistant, a operations manager, an investor relations person, something like that, that can help you with your back office operations, organizing to scale your day-to-day execution and your processes. And that first hire will then start helping you basically organize your brain, organize your vision, organize your ideas into executable playbooks that they can handle for you. And then they'll help, the right hire will help push you to go do the things that are going to do the revenue generating activities, which is talk to investors, go to conferences, all of those types of things. Because if you're not doing that, then your first hire feels like a cost center. And you have to offset it with the revenue generating activities. So you're not going to use the time that is bought back by hiring to do something that drives revenue. It's going to feel like a cost center. But when you use it to drive revenue and continue to do that, and the person that you hire is operationalizing everything, then your ratios or your margins start to shift. And then you can excel and scale, which is exactly what these leaders want to do.
So you mentioned, you know, the owner's profile, understanding your own profile. Do you recommend people kind of going through personality test or some sort of exercise in order to have a better understanding and be honest with yourself?
Yes. I think a good policy is always to be honest with yourself. The struggle is sometimes we have blind spots as leaders. We think we're being honest with ourselves, but we maybe don't see it clearly. So what we do is we have a right people, right seats assessment that we do. And then we also use the DISC profile, which is something pretty well known. Tony Robbins' team uses it. It's a pretty well known personality profile. And it allows us to see with pretty decent clarity the natural wiring of someone. It doesn't mean that we're pigeonholing people that you can't change or evolve or grow, because we're advocates for that. It just gives us a sense that allows the person to see themselves and see others in a more holistic, transparent, and authentic way. And when we can do that, to your point, we can then make some of those psychological transformations and those mindset shifts, because we're dealing with the facts and there really isn't a right or wrong wiring. Somebody may be really great at analyzing deals because they're analytical. And they're great at costing and financial modeling and all of that. And that's what they enjoy doing. And you could have somebody else who they're not naturally wired that way, but they're incredible at negotiating strategic deals and partnering with thought leaders. And they're really good at that aspect of it. Then you just hire the opposite. And then you have more of an integrated operations versus feeling like you have to be all things or you're less than if you're not a certain way.
So just to remind everybody, if you want to learn what Stacy and her team and how they can possibly help you, head over to organizetoscale.com or take advantage of what Stacy is offering there. Shoot her a quick email at scale@organizetoscale.com to get those free resources. And if you found some value in what we're talking about so far here today, do us a quick favor and share this with one of your investor friends. I'm sure they're going to find this really insightful. And if you're watching us on YouTube, do give us a thumbs up and subscribe to the channel. So, Stacy, I'd be curious, what are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen businesses make then in preparation for scaling?
I think I could summarize the biggest mistake is, in order to scale our businesses, we have to organize and scale ourselves. And sometimes when we hit ceilings in our business, so how you know that you're ready to scale, operationalize and scale your business is you can't do more. You're hitting a capacity issue. You feel like you're always behind the eight ball. Your business looks like your kitchen junk drawer. You feel like you're just reactive to all the opportunities and things that are coming in versus it being organized and methodical and process oriented. And we often think that the solution is that I am just going to hire more people or I am just going to work harder myself. And that is the solution. But really, it's being disciplined to say no. And to say no to squirrel syndrome, shiny penny syndrome, say no to the things that are going to disrupt really where you want to go, and be ruthlessly honest with yourself about the things that you're doing that aren't producing the results that you want inside of your business. And some of those things are, you say you hire somebody and then you ask them to do something, you delegate something to them, and they're not doing it fast enough, or they're not doing it the way you want it done, or something is just not resonating. And instead of having the conversation, you take it back and you say, okay, I'm just going to do it. It's the wrong person. And we create these narratives that aren't serving us, instead of sitting with it for a little bit and saying, how am I showing up as a leader that is hindering the growth of the people and processes inside of my organization? And I say this with not just seeing other people do it, I say also having done it myself. I've built several seven-figure businesses, and I have been an amazing leader. And then at times when I've been trapped in my business and I've hit a ceiling, I've been a struggling leader. And so learning to really reconcile who you are as a leader and how you want to show up is a keystone habit, if you will, in scaling your business.
Would you say then that that is one of the biggest downfalls when somebody fails at scaling their business? Is that lack of clarity?
I think it's a lack of clarity, but it's also a lack of, I think people get trapped in their business for one of two reasons. One, they lack systems and they're not aware it's a systems issue. Or two, they let their passion consume them. So they're so excited about the next deal. And so they go try to take down this next deal, and then they throw it over their fence to their team. And then because they threw it over the fence, they feel like, okay, time's freed up. I can go do more things now. And then they go get those next one deal, two deal, three deal, four deal, squirrel syndrome, shiny penny syndrome. And then they put so much burden on the operational structures that are still trying to to systematize and streamline from the first deal that the leader started maybe 30 days prior. So some of that is what causes folks to really hit that ceiling and then not scale. Is this, I guess we could summarize it in self-awareness, the self-awareness of what is happening operationally in the business and how they're showing up and what their passion is doing to them. It's a psychological container, I feel like visionary leaders have to somehow create, where, okay, these are great ideas, these are great visions, I want to do all of these things, and I'm going to have to time box certain things because I can't do everything at once. And when we bite off more than we can chew, there's a saying, bite off more than you can chew, then chew it. But sometimes what happens is you bite off more than you can chew and you choke if you don't have the right people and the right systems and the right support around you. And so really, the thing that scales, that gets businesses started, is that maverick, like, I can do it. I'm going to jump out of the plane and I'll build the parachute on the way down and let's just go. That's a great energy to get started. But in order to scale, it has to get operationalized. And sometimes that feels like slowing down to go faster, which is really viscerally challenging for maverick type leaders.
Well, you've mentioned, you know, putting systems and processes in place a few times here now. Is there any particular tool or strategy people should consider incorporating early on? Let's say you are a solopreneur or an entrepreneur and you're doing this on your own, but you have hopes and dreams that eventually you are going to scale. Are there some things or activities we can do now in order to prepare for that future?
Yes. So how tactical do you want me to be? Like, really tactical?
Very tactical. Okay. I want people to have things to do today.
Okay. So if you're a solo entrepreneur and you know you want to scale your syndication business, then everything that you're doing today, document while you're doing it. And the easiest way to do that is, I'm going to give two tools. One is called Loom, L-O-O-M. It's a screen recording video thing. And it's a plugin that you can just put on your Google browser or whatever internet browser you use. And you run that in parallel with another tool called Tango, like the salsa dancing Tango. You run those two in parallel and it will just screen capture and video record your entire day-to-day that you're doing. And so then you can create a spreadsheet while you're doing your work. Like, okay, this is how I check my email. This is how I respond to an investor. This is how I send a request to be on a podcast, or what all the things that you're doing, you just start documenting while you're doing it, put it in a spreadsheet. And so when you do hit that capacity thing, you can just audit your list of things that you're already doing and easily delegate it to somebody without it taking any extra of your time, because you're doing the work and just turning on two tools to document.
Yeah, you're not the first one to recommend Loom. I've heard that being used quite a few times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great tool. So we originally only used Loom. And then one of our team members, she found Tango in parallel. And what Tango does is it takes screenshots of your screen while you're doing the activity. So you have a written example of what you're doing with visual screenshots, but then you have a full video as well that somebody could watch.
Could you share an example of a solopreneur who came into your group and where they are now?
Sure. I have had someone come in who was at zero. Like, they hadn't raised any capital. They were excited about doing it. They were in another program for about 6 months and hadn't raised any capital. And then they came and went through our Organize to Scale program, and within 4 months went from zero raise to 5 million raised. So that was a really great success. I've had other people come in who have already been raising capital. So I had a guy come in who had already raised 20 million and he was vertically integrated. So he had a development company, a property management company, plus the real estate investing. And then now he wanted to start raising capital. And so what we did with him is create the Organized to Scale infrastructure and operations. And I don't know exactly what number he's at right now in terms of capital raise, but he is now able to do volume-wise way more deals than he was able to do previously because of the systems. And now he just hired two more people because of the growth of the development company as well.
I'm sure that there's a certain point in time where an entrepreneur is wondering if it's time to engage a group like yours. What type of questions should they be asking, and not only to themselves, but when they're talking to a group like yours, what type of questions should they be asking to make sure it's a right fit?
Sure. So I think one is questions to ask yourself, like, what do you want out of your business? Do you want a lifestyle business? Do you want to raise $1 billion? Like, what is it that you really want? And then with that clarity, then you can go see if something is going to, if something like Organized to Scale would be a good fit or not based on what it is that you want to achieve. And then when you are in talking with someone like me, I would be asking, like, what you just asked me, can you give me some examples of people who were in my similar situation and the type of success that they've experienced? I would be asking time horizons, like how long from the time I start until I can start getting the results that I am seeking. And the other thing that I would ask is, what is expected of me if I were to engage you? How do I have to grow as a person, or what are my time commitments to this? I like to think of Organizing to Scale kind of like diets. Like, most diets work if you do the diet. The struggle is that we getting ourselves to do the diet is part of that hurdle. So making sure that you're aligning with people that don't just provide the diet to you, but also provide the accountability structures that are necessary to achieve what you want to achieve, because that's really where traction comes.
I feel like I'm asking you a lot of mindset type questions, but the next thing would be, you know, as I frankly, this is personally now, I have a hard time letting certain things go, because you have it in your mind that nobody cares as much as you, and nobody is going to do it exactly the way you want it done. How do you break through that mindset and finally allow yourself to delegate and trust those people that you've put in those positions?
You're saying so many important things, but can I ask you one question? Have you been called a control freak ever?
No, not exactly. Well, maybe my business partner has called me that a couple of
times. Well, okay. So most people who have a mindset, like you just said, where nobody can do it better than me, nobody's going to do it as great as me. And in a lot of ways, we get significance from doing it. When we have partners or team members, they sometimes say we're control freaks. And I don't think that that's necessarily true. What I do think it is true is that we're quality freaks. We want to protect our credibility. We want to protect our reputation. We want things to be done with excellence. And there's nothing wrong with that. We should, especially as syndicators, because you're raising money, hard-earned money from other people. And you want to be responsible and be excellent in where you put that money so you can give them an ROI. So you should be behaving like that. But if we think about the cash flow quadrant, like Robert Kiyosaki's cash flow quadrant, the only way to move from the ENS side to the BNI side is systems. That's the only way to do it. And the journey of doing that is recognizing that systems are what create quality. And then what we have to do as leaders is to measure quality. And then when we measure quality and we have visibility into the quality, we're no longer control freaks. It's black and white. Did this happen or did this not happen? And it's not mean. It's not like you did something wrong or I'm coming down on you. It's really, hey, we were supposed to talk to 5 investors this week. Like, there's only a room for a number. 5? Not a story. Like, how many did you talk to? And so then it becomes a matter of full transparency inside of the organization that then builds trust, which is, to your point, critical. And one of my favorite books is Trust. It's called Trust by Dr. Henry Cloud. And I used to think of trust as an on-off switch. Either you had it or you don't have it. But in this book, it talks about the anatomy of trust and the 5 aspects of trust. And when I started really diving into that and how I show up to build trust and then what builds trust with me and started integrating that more into the systems that create the quality, then there's less of that control freak, micromanagement, nobody can do it better than me type of energy, because everything's above the table and you're not guessing if it's done with excellence. It's obvious if it's done with excellence.
Well, Stacy, this is fantastic information and you brought so much value to this show. Before we switch into some of my rapid fire questions, and frankly, you've answered some of those already too, is there a question or concept you think we should have tried to cover here today?
I would love to just share a methodology that I have found to work. And it's operating your business, or if you're launching and wanting to organize to scale your business, do it in 3 steps. Do an architect phase, a build phase, and an operate phase. So real estate investors can really relate to this. If you're going to do ground up development, you wouldn't just go hire a concrete guy to lay slab. You would create a blueprint. And that's what the architect phase is in your business as well. Create your business blueprint. So you know what you're actually building and what you want it to do for you and what you want the flow in your home and the flow in your business to be. And then go build your MVP. Go build your infrastructure, lay the foundation, put your cabinets and sinks and everything up, and then operate it. And that's where you plug your property manager or your tenants in to run day to day. And what happens in business is we don't realize that there's a skill set that is for architect. There's a skill set that is for build, and there's a skill set that is for operate. And we'll hire people who are operate minded and ask them to architect, or we'll hire people that are architect minded and ask them to operate. And it is a mismatch. And I've done this so many times. I've seen so many people do it. So when you're thinking of your business, think of it like you're building a house and think of it methodically. And I think that can help a lot of folks really build it what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is one of those things. And the audience has probably have heard me say this a number of times. And unless you write things down, get things organized, you don't have a target to shoot at. You need this stuff in front of you in order to, so you know where to aim. Mm-hmm. And that especially, I think that really helps, especially when you bring on those people, because now it's a shared vision and it's a shared communication, and now you're all driving in the same direction.
Yes, exactly.
Well, one more time, organizetoscale.com. Take advantage of those free resources by emailing scale@organizetoscale.com. All of those are going to be clickable links in the show notes. But if you are ready, Stacy, here are some of those rapid fire questions I promised.
Let's go.
So first of all, what lie do real estate investors tell themselves and sometimes to others?
I'm the best at everything.
Yeah, you caught me on that.
It's you know what though, the positive side of that is confidence, and you need confidence to scale a business.
And I suppose that, you know, that actually going through your processes and techniques in order to get ready for scaling, that actually is going to also increase your confidence. The more you know about your business, the more you have something to aim at, the more confident you're going to sound.
Absolutely. When you have clarity of vision and an action plan that you execute, confidence skyrockets, and then you have positive momentum, and positive momentum is a multiplier.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Do you have a book recommendation, or what are you reading right now? And trust is one of those things where I think you've already answered that.
Yeah. So can I give more than one?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So I created Organized to Scale around 5 books. And these 5 books have really transformed so many of our businesses. One is Trust, which I already mentioned. The next is Traction by Gino Wickman. The
look over my shoulder.
Oh, okay. And then the other is Profit First by Mike Michalowicz.
Another book over. And Mike's been on the show.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Yes. E-Myth by Michael Gerber.
That one's over there as well.
Okay. The last one would be Measure What Matters.
Oh, don't have that one.
Okay. It's Objectives and Key Results. And I can't even remember the author's name off the top of my head, but that book will help visionary leaders understand metrics so they can have visibility without being called control freaks.
Well, I'm going to take a look at both of those. Trust and Measure What Matters is the gap in there. Yeah. I got 3 out of the 5. How did I do?
Yeah, amazing. And you just reminded me of another book that is phenomenal when you said the word gap, which is, this is more mindset, but Dan Sullivan wrote a book called The Gap in the Gain. And it, have you read it?
I have it in my Audible library, okay. But I haven't gotten to it yet.
So I think your audience maybe will resonate with this. So when we, as the leaders, we set goals, which is so critical for us, aim, right? You have a goal and you set it, and then you go work towards achieving it, and maybe you get 50% there or 70% there. And what we do as high achievers is we get 70% there, and we judge ourselves on the gap instead of how far we come. And then worse, what we do is we get 70% there and then we move the target. And so we're continually, perpetually feeling behind. We're not good enough, not making enough progress, but we're judging ourselves on the wrong thing. And so one of the things that I've started to incorporate with myself and our clients is celebration, like celebrating the wins that we're having so we can enjoy the journey of building and scaling our organizations instead of just perpetually bringing in the grind.
No, that's a good tip. If you could go back in time and give your younger self one piece of advice, what would that be?
Listen to your intuition.
What single strategy, process, or tool have you implemented that has had the biggest time-saving impact?
Our delegate and transcend tool.
Delegate and transcend tool. What is that a software? Or?
We created a interactive spreadsheet that we use it integrates what we call our sweet spot matrix. So everyone has their natural sweet spot. And then when you hit a capacity ceiling, you have to be able to say, okay, what's everything on my plate that I'm doing? And what portions of this pie can I delegate? And which ones should I delegate based on my sweet spot? And who should I delegate to? And what type of expense saving will that have? And how quickly can I get there? And that has been a tool that has really helped our teams and our clients up level with less stress. It's very similar to Traction, they have Delegate and Elevate, but theirs is just like a PDF that you can download and use. What we created was an interactive spreadsheet. So you can have this running log with pie charts and graphs. You can see progress, which has been provide some visuals and that help the momentum of delegating. Because sometimes people like to hold on to things. And so if the Delegate tool helps with the visuals so they can let go with visibility.
Well, Stacy, this has been a great conversation. One last time, you could learn more at organizedtoscale.com. Shoot her a quick email at scale@organizedtoscale.com. Take advantage of those free resources. And but it's been great chatting with you. You brought a lot of value today, and I hope we'll chat again sometime very soon.
Yes, thank you so much for having me on. You've been a phenomenal question asker.
Well, I appreciate it.
Have you learned at least one actionable step to incorporate into your real estate investing? If so, please consider returning some of that value by leaving a positive review, subscribing to our YouTube channel, or joining our growing network on Facebook and Twitter. You can find links to all of our social media accounts in the show notes. See you next time.